Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Friday, October 16th, 2015. And with me today, I have John Martellaro. How are you, John?
Good morning. I'm all full of, as you said before the show, I'm all full of piss and vinegar this morning.
Boy, howdy. And Adam Christensen from the MacCast. How's it going, Adam?
Good. I've never understood that term. I need to brush up on my history.
You know, I'm betting if I brushed up on my history, I'd probably stop using that term completely. Because I'm assuming I would just be appalled by what it means. I mean, like when I found out what the history of your time in the barrel means, and that was enlightening. Anyhow, hey, we have a sponsor today, and our sponsor is Casper, the awesome mattress company. We'll be talking about them in a bit. Before we get to that, though, I wanted to take a look at the state of the iPad, and this comes from reading a piece that you wrote a couple days ago, John, where you were talking about the race that Apple and Microsoft are in to come up with the next thing for tablets, and I thought we should take a look at the state of the iPad and discuss what needs to be changed, if anything. I think you have some ideas, John.
Yeah, I think that things are subtly changing after 5 years of the iPad. One of the things that's happened is that we all know how to use an iPad now, and I don't want to speak for everybody, but at least in my case, I think many people are sort of too relaxed about the iPad, and just you see it as a, you know, large phone, and it's easy to tap and you can do things with. But it's really, the hardware has really grown. Phil Schiller at the September 9th event showed a graph about how the CPU and the GPUs are 20 or so times faster than the original iPad. The original iPad was very slow and very limited.
But and it sure didn't feel that way.
I felt it because, you know, there was no NTP client, and so the clock drifted. It was really stripped down seriously so that they could get the 10-hour battery life out of it, and also all sorts of non-essential demons were stripped out. But I think the hardware limitations back in 2009 led to a design decision on the iPad that followed the iPhone sensibly. But here we are in 2015. We've got an A9X in the iPad Pro. It's monstrously powerful. It's capable. And yet Apple's sort of, you know, slowly trying to fix it up and band-aid it with picture-in-picture and slide over and split-screen multitasking, and saying, well, finally, you know, maybe we should exploit the power of this processor and the iPad should grow up a little bit. I think
now,
it should grow up more.
Split-screen band-aiding.
Yeah, I'm curious about that too.
Well, I've talked about this before, I think, on TDO. We've all grown up with Macintoshes where we're accustomed to having overlapping windows, and we're accustomed to having multiple user accounts, and we're accustomed to having multiple processes running and doing multiple things at the same time. The iPad idea was you only do one thing at a time. And so all the potential power of the BSD Unix operating system underneath was wasted. And we just sort of sit there and do one thing at a time. Well, and that sort of limits your creativity and your productivity, in my mind. And so what you'd like to do is you'd like to have a tablet that you could really go to town with and have some real power. And what would be wrong with overlapping windows on a 13-inch screen?
Well, that would be a laptop at that point.
Well, if Tim Cook believes that the iPad is the future and that's where we're headed, then why shouldn't we let the hardware bloom and the software bloom instead of holding it back?
Well, is that really holding it back? I mean, it's a different form factor. It's intended to be used in a different way. So does it really need to evolve to be nothing more than a laptop without a keyboard attached?
Well, look at the sales figures. That's my argument. The sales of the iPad are declining because people are finding they can't do anything more with it. Tim Cook has already admitted that there's cannibalization where people feel like, you know, after 5 years, this is all I can do with my iPad. Well, I better go out and get a MacBook Air so I can get to work.
Well, but people are still buying iPads, and declining sales doesn't mean that the overall numbers for iPads are diminishing. It just means that Apple isn't selling them at the same pace that they used to.
Yeah, well, anytime you have a product category that's declining in sales over many, many, many quarters, Apple gets annoyed and upset, and Tim Cook probably in quiet meetings has pounded the table and said, you know, we got to do something. And we've seen Apple trying to do something with the improvements on iOS 9 and the relationship with IBM and business sales and business tools on the iPad and the things that they're doing to try to breathe some life into it, say the iPad Pro, a bigger screen, you can do more with it, enter new markets that you couldn't before. So they're trying. So it's definitely trying. They're working against the grain, though, in that the sales continue to decline, and nobody expects the iPad Pro to suddenly turn that around. I expect it to supplement the sales and increase it for roughly 15% or so. But I don't think it's going to turn the curve around and get the iPad back on sales growth. And you always worry about that because we thought back in 2010 or 11 that, you know, the iPad was the future. But I don't think, in my opinion, I'm going against the grain here. I know I'm going to take some flack. But my opinion is that it hasn't grown as fast because it's been sort of slaved to the iPhone. You know, there's only so much difference you want to have between the two operating systems for the two devices. There's parts of the operating system that know that it's on an iPad and not on an iPhone, and so there's certain things you do. But one example of that is the home screen on an iPad. I mean, here we're on the precipice of a 12.9-inch iPad Pro, and what are we going to have? We're going to have a home page with a grid of about, you know, 12 or 16 little icons. Isn't that kind of silly for a machine of that caliber, that horsepower, that class? You know, we really should be moving ahead forward. And so it brings up the idea that maybe iOS is being held back by the phone, Apple's bread and butter. And maybe the iPad, which we all know how to use by now, isn't, you know, evolving at the pace we'd like to. That's just my opinion.
So are you implying that Apple should take the iPad and move it over to full OS 10?
No. I'm implying that iOS 9 should evolve even more sharply. And if Apple has to make even sharper differences between the iOS for the iPad and for the iPhone, they should. We've seen them do that. They're starting to do that. And we've seen how Microsoft's vision contrasts. I wrote about that in the article about having Windows 10 everywhere and having Windows 10 on your tablets, on your Surface Pro 4, and on your Surface Book, so that you have lots of options for productivity. And I think Microsoft is suddenly on to something here. I think what happened was the hardware that we had in 2009 wasn't up to speed, and so it shackled iOS.
In what way are you just specifically, what's the feature, I guess, that you're trying to get at that you think makes an iPad more grown up or more sharply evolved?
Well, a start is the multitasking split screens. A start is a larger display. I wouldn't mind seeing overlapping windows.
Okay, so the overlapping windows thing, I understand that that's coming from this desktop metaphor that we've had like for forever. I don't see how that makes anybody more productive because you can only interact with one window at a time anyway, other than maybe reading some notes, which are accomplished through the new split screen functionality. Especially on a small display. On a 12-inch display, there's only so many windows you can cram onto the screen. Maybe I can get a music player up, but I'm not interacting with that while I'm working. Maybe I look down to see a piece of album art, I guess. But is it making me a lot more productive if I can have that window in view or not?
Well, the proof of the pudding is for me is that here we are 5 years after the iPad launched, and I'm still not using it to write my articles.
But why not?
because I don't feel comfortable with it. I don't think I have
unwillingness to force yourself to do that, or is that a limitation of the device?
I think it's both. I think I don't see that I have the opportunity to implement my workflow that I use on my Mac and implement it on the iPad.
There's where I think that's the problem.
That's part of the problem.
Implement the Mac workflow on a tablet, and I think Apple would argue that's not the thinking. And if you follow or read anything, like Federico Vici forced himself to use an iPad, and that's what he uses. He does all of his writing, all of his blog posting, all of his entire workflow, and he's worked out new workflows for that device and prefers that work method now.
Well, you know, that's where I'm going to get an iPad Pro, because I should give that a whirl.
You know, I've been writing articles for a long time on my iPad. Now, it's not my exclusive tool for writing articles, but when I want to work on a different screen, when I go to the coffee shop, and I don't want to take my computer with me, then I take my iPad. And I've written extensive articles on my iPad, and I don't even use an external keyboard.
I was going to ask you about that.
That's the tip of the iceberg, though, too. The other thing about the larger screen iPad is we haven't seen the software that's going to be developed for it. So, you know, we also have to look at, I think there's going to be some amazing pro apps from Adobe. And I think we've already seen hints of it this week with Adobe bringing out the Lightroom app, which has been getting rave reviews. And it's the new Photoshop app that they came out with. I'm blanking on the name. I apologize.
That's okay. I'm blanking on the name too. But they also have merged everything together for their vector stuff on the iPad into what is it, Sketch?
Yeah.
And then they have the new app that's coming out, which is
called Fix.
Fix. That's right. And then what's the other one? It's I'll call it InDesign Lite. It's a page layout application for the iPad. Mm-hmm. And those, you put all those things together, and all of a sudden the iPad Pro looks very exciting because it lets you do a lot of the things that people otherwise would turn to a desktop computer for. But it does them in the format of a tablet. It doesn't give that up. It's still a tablet interface, which I think is good. John, I don't want overlapping windows. I don't want my tablet to work the same as my laptop. They're different platforms, and they're different systems for interacting with my data, and I want them to be different.
I appreciate how the iPad works, and I enjoy using it. I have an iPad Air, and I use it quite a bit. But perhaps it's my problem because I haven't really worked hard enough in trying to force it into a productivity mode that I can use. I'm a big screen person. I'm an OS X person. I'm a keyboard person. And that probably influences my thinking a little bit, but I'd still like to see some evolution of the iPad technically and OS-wise to get it out of its early phase thinking.
I think it's already moving in that direction. The thing is I think you don't have to force yourself to use an iPad unless you really want to. My thing is if someone really wants that to be their mobile platform of choice, they can make it that platform, I think, even today with the apps and the way it functions. And it's getting better. And we're getting things like the iPad Pro. But I still buy this philosophy that they're two different environments and two different workflows, and you can't think about the two platforms in the same way. I think if you try to do that and you try to force that, what you end up with is a compromised experience on both sides. And I think that's what Apple's railing against. And I think, to me, the Surface Pro has sort of proven that. You know, I look at the new stuff that they're doing, and these are, you know, basically desktops with touchscreens, in my
opinion. And there's a market for that.
Fine. It's not a market that Apple feels that there's value in, apparently. But, I mean, you could argue, too, at this point, that the iPad Pro is Apple's first tablet with a touchscreen. And we're going to see how it's going to do.
Yes. Yes, I agree. And that was why I wrote that article I wrote the other day. It was on the 14th, Apple and Microsoft race to rethink the tablet. I just have this feeling that we're pressure from Microsoft and rethinking from Microsoft and Apple working on the iPad Pro and talking about styluses and keyboards. Both companies are sort of nibbling around the edges of where do we go with the tablet in the next phase to bring some life into it. Because we want this product category to grow, not shrink.
Well, I think it's only going to naturally grow because I think it is the future. So, and I think Tim Cook firmly believes that, and I think Apple believes that. So, but I don't think they're ever going to make the current notebook experience something that is wholly realized on a tablet.
Well, I'm not searching for that. I'm just searching for tremendous more technological, growth. Yeah. And when you think about the way we operate the iPad and use it, it's been sort of pretty much the same for 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we're getting a big change next month because we get the 12.9-inch iPad. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Plus we get the Apple Pencil and the keyboard case. And it'll be interesting to see where all that goes. Now, I would love to keep talking about this, but we have a sponsor and another topic that I really wanted to hit today. So I'm going to cut us off. But I am going to say, listeners, what do you think? Is John on the right track or is he totally off base? I want to know what you think. And you can let me know on Twitter. That would be TMO Daily. You can let me know via email, observations@macobserver.com. And you can leave comments in the show notes. I will check all those places, and I'm really looking forward to hearing what you think about John's take on the iPad. And our sponsor is Casper, the awesome mattress company. They make these kind of sandwichy types of foam mattresses. That has to be the most elegant description of their mattresses ever. Wow. Anyhow, so these mattresses that they make are designed to give you the right amount of support and the right amount of flex so that you feel comfortable in these beds as opposed to feeling like you're sleeping on a board or stuck inside a giant sponge. And they're just like wonderfully comfortable. And I'm saying this from experience because I'm a Casper mattress user myself. And if you're leery of what I'm saying, and I've spent 2 years using one of these beds, so I feel pretty comfortable in what I'm saying. But I'm okay if you don't believe me completely. And Casper's okay with that too, because what they'll do is let you try out a mattress for 100 days, which is great. Because trying out a new mattress for a few hours or a couple nights or even a week, that doesn't tell you if the bed is really going to work for you in most cases. What you need to do is give it more time because you're switching to a different bed. It's going to feel different anyhow, and you need to figure out if it really is going to work for you. So they give you a 100-day trial window, and if you don't like the bed after that window, then they'll take it back. And you won't even have to pay shipping to get it back. And while that's a very generous offer on their part, I think it's also a really safe offer because I can't imagine that you would want to return your bed. So these beds are awesome. They're priced lower than the competition. I have the queen size mattress and it's $850. A comparable bed from another manufacturer is going to run you over $1,000. And I like saving money. So they like saving, like that you can save money too. So what Casper did was they gave us a special $50 discount we can pass on to you, which rocks. So what you need to do is go to casper.com/TDO and then pick out the mattress that you want, and you're going to get a $50 discount. Also, you don't pay shipping, which is cool. And go pick out the mattress you want and start sleeping better. We can't sleep in the same bed because people will talk, but we can sleep in the same bed. So why not? Go pick up your Casper mattress today and let me know what you think. And thank you, Casper, for being our sponsor today. Okay, so the other thing that I wanted to take a look at real quick before we wrap up, did you guys see the update to Tesla's ludicrous mode that adds in automated driving?
I don't own a Tesla, so I didn't actually see it, but I did see the news about it.
Okay, well, that'll have to do for now. And Adam, what do you think?
I think we're moving fast toward the future of automobiles. It seems amazing to me. I did see there was a video that surfaced online of somebody taking a drive in one.
Jalopnik.
Freaking out about it changing lanes by itself.
Yes, I saw the video.
And I was very impressed with that. The other thing that it seemed to fully illustrate is what Google and I think Elon Musk have been saying all along, that really when we get to full autonomous vehicles, this concept of being able to override the vehicle is probably not a very good one. Mm-hmm. I think Tesla, to cover their rear, says with this new feature to never take your hands off the steering wheel. Of course, immediately, what everybody's going to do if they have this feature is take their hands off the steering wheel.
Well, of course.
Because it's not cool otherwise. But in the little test thing, the guy's driving along, and he actually jumps in at one point because he gets nervous and notes that the computer software, right after he jumped in itself. And, you know, they've expressed that most of the accidents that they see happening with these autonomous vehicles are when humans are jumping in and not letting the software do its job.
It's going to take all the fun out of the movies, Adam. You're going to be trying to evade some tail, and you go, oh, I'm being tailed. Car, turn left here now into the alley. And the car goes, sorry, I wouldn't be safe. I can't do that.
I think Musk said he envisions a day where there's a button and sort of the steering wheel pops out at some point, just like what was the Will Smith movie, iRobot.
iRobot, right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, like you said, Adam, it looks like the most dangerous part of the automated driving systems so far are the humans, because they try and take over and tend to react inappropriately to potentially hazardous driving situations when the car's computer totally had it under control.
It's got all the sensors. What I like too about the display is apparently it lights up which sensors are sort of sensing, you know, when someone is to the left or right of you or behind you or what the distance front. So there's a lot of visual feedback that happens in the dash display to let you know sort of what it's analyzing and how it's reacting, which is kind of cool.
I saw an article the other day that said 70% of the small number of accidents between autonomous test cars and human drivers are because the autonomous car was being too conservative and safe, and it called this, the driving situation called for everybody to be aggressive so that everybody could succeed. And when the autonomous car took the conservative, slow approach, it ended up getting dinged.
but by the human drivers.
Yeah, so in a mixed environment, it's going to be interesting to see.
Yeah.
Yeah. Still, I really want to go driving around town in a Tesla in ludicrous mode with autopilot turned on. I want to experience that. So okay, anyone in Boulder or Denver with a Tesla that wants to take me out for a ludicrous mode ride, let me know, because I am so there. Hey, we're out of time, so we're going to have to wrap up. John, thank you so much for being here today.
It was a pleasure.
And Adam, thank you for being here too. I appreciate that you took the time out of your busy schedule to join me.
Well, thank you. It's fun.
It's fun. And Casper, thank you for being our sponsor all week long. Listeners, head over to their website and get $50 off an amazingly awesome mattress. That website is casper.com/TDO. And I absolutely love my mattress. I think you'll love yours too. Listeners, thank you for being here today. We'll see everyone again next week.